Chapter 29. Kate put on a coat to grab the newspaper from her front step, then slammed the front door, ignoring the press collecting on the sidewalk outside her house. She didn't see any of the FBI agents, and she didn't care. It didn't matter now. Nothing did. She slid the newspaper from its clear plastic sleeve, dotted with raindrops, and unfolded it, separating its soaked, pinked edges. "Federal judge wields knife," screamed the headline on the front page, and Kate read the story with dismay. It was all about last night, including eyewitness accounts of her running down Meadowbrook Drive, brandishing a knife, quote, "on the apparent belief that she was being stalked," unquote. It made her sound ridiculous, but it was true. And at the bottom of the page was the related story. Federal judge stars in new series. Fact or fiction, you be the judge. Kate held her breath as the story reported that the offices of attorneys at law in Old City had confirmed that a new TV series titled Judges at Court was presently in production, starring an empowered-type female judge with a secret sex life. A representative of attorneys at law confirmed that the series would be completely fictional, despite the fact that the show's creator was recently sued in a case before Judge Kate Marie Fanti. The representative gave no further details except to say that the new show would bring approximately 1,568 new jobs to the city. As bad as the stories were, they weren't even close to the one that sent Gina into orbit. Kate turned to the metro section and her mouth went dry. The photo showing her going into the Fort Washington bar was plastered on the top half. She sank to the entrance hall floor, barely able to read the column. Judge Kate Marie Fanti of the Eastern District of Pennsylvania has been very busy after hours, and she's not working overtime. She's dating. You may think this is none of our business or yours until you understand that several of her dates are men convicted of assault, battery, check forgery, and even violations of federal weapons laws. Now ask yourself, is this any way to run our legal system? We should note that our many calls to Judge Fanti's chambers went unanswered. Kate could only skim the sentences, as if to read the text thoroughly would be to absorb the full brunt of its impact, like standing still in front of a speeding car. The piece contained every detail about the bars, all culled from the record and the stolen file. Russo must have found another way to hurt her. The best way. He had leaked the entire record to the newspaper, and its reporters had taken it from there, putting two and two together and calling Micah, just as Kate had, then digging deeper. The newspaper even identified four of the men she'd dated with their photos. Jeff Rader, Mark Boulez, Mike Holloman, Mustafa Raheed. Kate closed her eyes, mortified. She remembered the men, though she hadn't known their last names, or that they had criminal records. She'd gone to the sleaziest bars and picked up the sleaziest men. Why hadn't she thought of that? What else did she expect? Of course some would be ex-cons, even felons. She turned back to one of the articles, an interview with one of the men, who had served time for fraud and drug offenses. "She picked me up at the bar. There wasn't a lot of conversation, if you follow." Kate felt as if her heart would break. She thought instantly of Graham. What would he say? How would he feel to know he was one of so many? How would he understand when Kate herself didn't? "What did I do right? Was it the bling? Tell me, so I'll do it again." Kate thought of everyone she cared about reading the articles. Chief Judge Sherman, Val, Emily, Sam, the courtroom deputy, the stenographer, the other judges at her celebration dinner last summer, Matt Sorian, all of her old partners, Mrs. Pershing, switchboard diva. "We're so proud of you." Kate thought of her enemies, too. Meriden, how much would he love this? How could she hold her head up on the court? How had this gone so wrong? She couldn't shake the ominous feeling that her world was about to end. She felt herself sink to her knees and doubled over on her costly Harese rug, feeling so much pain that not even a single tear would come. Her only overriding thought was to thank God that her mother did not live to see this day. In time, Kate got dressed in a black Prada suit, ready for work earlier than usual, because she had to put her office back together after Hurricane Russo. She slipped on a pair of huge sunglasses and felt as if she were running a modern-day gauntlet, from the press snapping her picture as she drove out of her garage, to Special Agent Brady at the end of the street in an unmarked car, to the security guard in the white kiosk at the judge's parking lot, to Judge Tom McGinn of the Third Circuit with his characteristic Santa Claus beard, who was getting out of his car at the same time as she was. The appellate court had its chambers on the penthouse floors of the courthouse, and Kate didn't even want to think about the talk up there today. She really liked Judge McGinn, and had even met his wife, Sue, who was as kind as Mrs. Claus. She slowed her steps so Judge McGinn would reach the judge's elevator lobby first, and ended up riding the elevator alone. It gave her 8 floors to screw up the courage to walk into her chambers, and even so, it wasn't nearly enough. She reached the door, braced herself, and opened it. The 2 clerks, clustered at Val's desk, sprang apart, their heads snapping up, surprised at her early arrival. They'd obviously been talking about her. She could smell it in the air. And Val, at her desk, looked stiff and miserable, her expression grim. The chambers fell stone silent, except for the rain lashing the window. And nobody said a word as Kate walked in, shed her coat and hung it up, slid off her sunglasses, and walked to Val's desk. "Good morning, everyone." Kate kept her face a professional mask and avoided their eyes as they all said their good morning judges. "The bodyguard isn't due in until 8:30. Val handed her her mail and phone messages over the low divider, her tone cool. "Chief Judge Sherman wants to see you when he gets off the bench. He thinks that'll be around 1 o'clock. The press has been calling, but I said we have no comment. You're in court at 11 for the plea agreement we rescheduled. Thanks." Kate flipped through the messages for Graham's name, but he hadn't called. It was early anyway. She looked up at the clerks. "Who has the plea today? Remind me."
"It's my case." Sam raised his hand. "The bench memo's on your chair."
"Thanks. Come in at 10:15 and we'll talk about it."
"It's only a guilty plea, Judge. It won't take that long."
"I want to be fully prepared today. Things didn't go so well yesterday, as you know." Kate turned toward her office, then stopped in surprise at the sight. The room had been completely put back together, even neater than before it had been ransacked. Case files stood up in order on the conference table. Legal pads sat stacked next to a lineup of blue and red briefs. Books had been restored to the bookshelves, and her desktop straightened up, with Graham's bouquet of red roses given a place of honor. It must have been so much work. Kate felt a wrench inside at the kindness of the gesture. "The clerks stayed late last night and cleaned up, all by themselves," Val said. And Kate turned to the clerks with a smile, dropping her mask. She was getting tired of so many masks all the time. They never fit right, and you couldn't breathe, like a kid at Halloween. "Thank you so much, both of you." Kate smiled. "That was a lovely thing to do, and I really appreciate it." "We organized it, too," Emily said, beaming. Sam nodded.
"It was Emily's idea, and she did most of the work. She thought it might cheer you up after you screwed up in court."
"Sam," Val said, frowning. "Mind your manners." "Sam," Emily snapped. "What are you, an idiot?"
"She said it first,"
Sam shot back, and Kate held up a hand, laughing. "It's okay, everybody. I did screw up in court. It's still very nice that you two cleaned and organized my office." Kate turned to go, then turned back. "Listen, I know you saw the newspaper, and I know it's awful. I wish I could tell you that it's not true, the part about my private life. But it is." All three listened with somber expressions, with Val at the desk and the 2 law clerks behind her, like a frieze of federal employees. "I have nothing to say for myself, except that I'm very sorry for my behavior. I know you thought better of me." "I don't think what you did is so terrible," Emily rushed to say, her voice thin with anxiety. "You're not married,
and they would never be making this fuss if you were a man.
Yeah, it's cool,
Sam added. Then he caught himself. I mean, what you do out of court is nobody's business, and it doesn't belong in the newspaper. They should be writing about the war in Iraq or global warming, not your personal life.
Thank you, Kate said, meaning it. And they all pretended not to notice that Val hadn't chimed in. The secretary looked down, showing her graying strands of hair at her temple, and she wore a blue patterned dress. Her gold crucifix peeked from her neckline. Kate asked, Val, would you come into my nice clean office?
Yes, Judge.
Val picked up a pad, and Kate went inside with her mail, messages, and purse, and set all of it down. By the time she turned around, Val had taken her customary seat across from the desk, with her pen poised over her paper. This isn't business, Val. Val set the pen on the pad stiffly. Kate sighed. I know what I did was wrong, and I know what you must think.
I don't think you do, Judge.
You're surprised.
That I am, yes, I am surprised.
And you're disgusted with me, and you should be.
No, that's not it.
Val shook her head sadly.
I feel sorry for you. I feel sorry that you think so little of yourself.
Kate felt the words like a slap to the face, though she knew they weren't intended that way.
I feel sorry that you respected yourself so little, and respected your body and your heart so little, as to do the things you did. When I saw that story this morning, I prayed for you.
Kate didn't know what to say, and Val rose slowly and looked at her with newly shining eyes.
It'll be a struggle around here with the other judges for you. There'll be jokes and people will talk, especially if they do that TV show.
Val stood up and stepped close to Kate, placing a soft hand on her shoulder.
When that happens, tell yourself that none of it matters. None of it. That's all outside, and nothing that's outside matters. Not the other judges, or the TV, or the gossips. Nothing matters but what's in your heart. Don't think on what they say, because you don't have to get yourself right with them. You have to get yourself right with you.
Kate felt moved by her words and the emotions that gave them life. The only person who had ever made so much sense to her was her mother.
When you get yourself right with you, then you can hold your head high. Now give me a hug.
Val threw her arms open and embraced Kate, who hugged her back, taking surprising comfort in her powdery smells, despite the fact that she was supposed to be a grown-up, a judge, and a boss besides. The phone started ringing, and Val released her.
I'll get it, she said. You get back to work and don't think on it.
Thanks, Kate said, returning to her desk, as Val picked up the phone.
Judge Fanti's chambers, she said, and after a minute. Please hold, and I'll see if she's available.
She pressed the hold button, and Kate looked up.
Judge Menking for you. Will you pick up?
Sure. Val pointed a warning finger at her.
Remember what I said. Inside, outside.
Inside, outside, Kate repeated like a little mantra, accepted the receiver, and pressed the button to take the call.
Bonner? Kate, my God in heaven, have you seen this trash? The Inquirer is out to get you. Where are they getting this? This is defamatory. You have to sue them, Kate.
Val hustled out of the office, diplomatically closing the door behind her. Truth is an absolute defense, Bonner.
You did all this? You? You?
Yes, I take full responsibility. I did it.
What?
Kate felt her cheeks get hot.
I did it. You couldn't have.
Actually, I can't believe it either.
But I did. I'm not proud of it, but I did it, and it's over. My God, Kate. What were you thinking? It's so common.
It's over, Bonner. That's all I can say. That, and I'm sorry.
Ring, ring.
Kate's other phone line started ringing, but she let Val get it.
But, Kate, this is an insult to the court. We can't have this, a judge of our court. They're saying on the internet that another man came forward. He's blogging about you right this moment. My clerk's found the webpage. Oh, God. There's nothing I can do, Bonner. I'm dumbfounded, Kate. I'm simply dumbfounded. I thought so well of you and how you represent women in our court. And now, well, it's just shameful.
I'm very sorry.
I am, too. Now they're going to portray you on TV? Our court on TV? How did this happen, Kate? How did you let this happen to us?
I don't know, Bonner.
Click. Kate sat, shaken, looking out the window, watching rain drench the city. The intercom buzzed, and Kate picked up.
Who's on the phone?
Judge Kingston, will you take it?
Yes.
And the bodyguard is here, Judge. Good. Kate pressed the button to pick up. Andrew Kingston was a senior judge and a real sweetheart. She remembered trying cases before him as a young associate, and he never made fun of her beginner cross-examinations. Good morning, Andrew.
Kate, I've just seen the newspaper, and you must get a copy. Not the Times, the Inquirer. My secretary says it's in the Daily News, too. They're writing the most terrible things about you, and they're trying to make it about our wonderful court. Spinning the story, I know it's called. Maligning us all. When it's in fact the most tawdry piece of pulp. Pulp.
I know, Andrew. I heard.
Ring, ring. The other phone rang again, but Kate let Val pick up. If it was Graham, he'd have to wait. What's this world coming to when people write such scandalous stories? To publish such things about a member of the court? Our court? It's a travesty. Of course it's scurrilous.
Andrew, I'm sorry, but it's true. There was complete silence on the end of the line. After a minute, Kate worried he'd had a heart attack. Andrew?
I'm sorry, I must have misheard you. My battery on my hearing aid, it must be running out. I thought you said it was true.
No, I'm sorry, Andrew. I've made some mistakes, I admit it.
My, Kate, it's true?
Yes.
All of it?
Yes, I know, I'm sorry.
It seems I've made a mistake, too. I'll leave you to it, then. Goodbye, Kate. Goodbye.
Kate let him hang up, then set the receiver down. The phone began ringing again, almost instantly. The intercom buzzed, and she picked up for Val.
Who is it?
Judge Mee. Oh, boy. How many judges are on this court again?
18, I think.
Okay. I'll pick up, Kate said, and hit the button. Kate, did you see the paper? It's revolting what they're saying. And on TV. I know. Kate cringed. How can they make a TV show about you without your permission? Did you give permission for this, Kate?
No, of course not.
Only 15 more to go. Kate took the next 15 calls from each of her colleagues who had toasted her when they thought she was all the things she appeared to be. Most were upset about the dating, but many also cared about her safety and their own. They had called about the articles in the newspaper or online, heard accounts on local TV, on KYW radio, had gotten an email about it, or heard from one of their law clerks about a new website, www.iscrewedjudgefanti.com. Kate was so busy taking the calls from her colleagues that she didn't get a chance to reach Graham or take calls from Matt Sorian, CNN, the Philadelphia Inquirer, Matt Lauer, MSNBC, ABC, Court TV, The View, National Organization of Women, The Wall Street Journal, Henry Schleif, Time Magazine, Entertainment Tonight, Celebrity Justice, The New York Times, Stephen Brill, The National Law Journal, David E. Kelly, American Lawyer, Judges Amy Nislow, Lynn Honickman, Adrian Drost, and Fiona McCann of the National Association of Women Judges, the William Morris Agency, and Detective Steve Nesbitt. By 10:30, only two of her colleagues hadn't called, and Kate was due to see one of them, Chief Judge Sherman, at 1 o'clock. The other one was Judge Meriden. Kate tried not to think about it as a timid knock came at her door. Come in, Sam, she called out, taking the bench memo from her inbox. She had to get ready for court. Not that she was looking forward to it. And what about Graham?